Jamie grunted. Whole families in two cases, large ones, almost clans. The houses turned all upsy-turvy and splashed with blood. Limbs ripped off the bodies and carried away, some found, partly eaten, some not. At one of those farms, Sheriff Peavy and his deputy found the youngest boy's head stuck on a fence pole with his skull smashed in and his brain scooped out. Witnesses? A few. A sheep herder coming back with strays saw his partner attacked. The one who survived was on a nearby hill. The two dogs with him ran down to try and protect their other master and were torn apart, too. The thing came up the hill after the herder but got distracted by the sheep instead, so the fellow struck lucky and got away. He said it was a wolf that ran upright like a man. Then there was a woman with a gambler. He was caught cheating at Watch Me in one of the local pits. The two of them were given a bill of circulation and told to leave town by nightfall or be whipped. They were headed for the little town near the salt mines when they were beset. The man fought. It gave the woman just enough time to get clear. She hid up in some rocks until the thing was gone. She said 'twas a lion. On its back legs? If so, she didn't wait to see. Last, two cowpunchers. They were camped on Debaria Stream near a young Manny couple on marriage retreat, although the punchers didn't know it until they heard the couple's screams. As they rode toward the sound, they saw the killer go loping off with the woman's lower leg in its jaws. It wasn't a man, but they swore on watch and warrant that it ran upright like a man. Jamie leaned over the neck of his horse and spat. Can't be so. Vanet says it can. He says there have been such before, although not for years. He believes they may be some sort of a mutation that's pretty much worked its way out of the true thread. All these witnesses saw different animals? Aye. The cowpokes described it as a tiger. It had stripes. Lions and tigers running around like trained beasts in a traveling show. And out here in the dust. Are you sure we aren't being tickled? I wasn't old enough to be sure of much, but I did know the times were too desperate to be sending young guns even so far west as Debaria for a prank. Not that Stephen Deschain could have been described as a prankster even in the best of times. I'm only telling what Vanet told me. The rope swingers who came into town with the remains of those two Manny behind them on a travois had never even heard of such a thing as a tiger. Yet that is what they described. The testimony's in here, green eyes and all. I took the two creased sheets of paper I had from Vanet out of my inner vest pocket. Care to look? I'm not much of a reader, Jamie said, as thee knows. Aye, fine, but take my word. Their description is just like the picture in the old story of the boy caught in the Stark Blast. What old story is that? The one about Tim Stoutheart, the wind through the keyhole. Never mind. It's not important. I know the punchers may have been drunk. They usually are if they're near a town that has liquor. But if it's true testimony, Vanet says the creature is a shape shifter as well as a shape changer. 23 dead, you say. Aye, aye. The wind gusted, driving the alkali before it. The horses shied, and we raised our neckerchiefs over our mouths and noses. Boogery hot, Jamie said. And this damned dust. Then, as if realizing he had been excessively chatty, he fell silent. That was fine with me, as I had much to think about. A little less than an hour later, we breasted a hill and saw a sparkling white hasi below us. It was the size of a barony estate. Behind it, tending down toward a narrow creek, was a large green garden and what looked like a grape arbor. My mouth watered at the sight of it. The last time I'd had grapes, my armpits had still been smooth and hairless. The walls of the hasi were tall and topped with forbidding sparkles of broken glass, but the wooden gates stood open as if an invitation. In front of them, seated on a kind of throne, was a woman in a dress of white muslin and a hood of white silk that flared around her head like gull wings. As we drew closer, I saw the throne was ironwood. Surely no other chair, not made of metal, could have borne her weight, for she was the biggest woman I had ever seen, a giantess who could have mated with the legendary outlaw prince, David Quick. Her lap was full of needlework. She might have been knitting a blanket, but held before that barrel of a body and breasts so big each of them could have fully shaded a baby from the sun, whatever it was, looked no bigger than a handkerchief. She caught sight of us, laid her work aside, and stood up. There was 6.5 feet of her, maybe a bit more. The wind was less in this dip, but there was enough to flutter her dress against her long thighs. The cloth made a sound like a sail in a running breeze. I remembered the Enji saying, "They eat the men's," but when she put one large fist to the broad plane of her forehead and lifted the side of her dress to dip a curtsy with her free hand, I nonetheless reined up. "Heil gunslingers," she called. She had a rolling voice, not quite a man's baritone. "In the name of Serenity and the women who bide here, I salute thee. May your days be long upon the earth." We raised our own fists to our brows and wished her twice the number. "Have you come from Inworld?" "I think so, for your duds aren't filthy enough for these parts. Although they will be if you bide longer than a day." And she laughed. The sound was moderate thunder. "We do," I said. It was clear Jamie would say nothing. Ordinarily close-mouthed, he was now stunned to silence. Her shadow rose on the whitewashed wall behind her, as tall as Lord Perth.